It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new study shows that the American middle class is starting to decline compared to peers in other countries. We'll find out what that says about the American economy.
First, the apocalypse is a hot topic in society today. It seems to be everywhere, from movies like the upcoming version of Godzilla and the comedy This Is the End. But what would really happen if the world as we know it ended?
That's a question our next guest set out to answer in his new book. He wanted to create a blueprint for rebuilding a functional society. Lewis Dartnell joins us now. He's a UK Space Agency research fellow at the University of Leicester. He writes regularly for the New Scientist, The Times, and The New York Times, and he's the author of, The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch. Lewis, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're a space research guy. Your area of expertise is astrobiology. What brought you down to Earth and to this topic of rebuilding our society?
I think it's just... So my main research, as you said, is in astrobiology and looking into the possibility, the real science, the search for life beyond Earth. I think it's one of those things that we've all thought about whether we're alone in the universe, about whether there might be something else out there or some kind of life on Mars. And I think the other question that every single one of us has thought about and, you know, maybe had a chat with our friends down and over in a cafe or in a bar or something late at night is, what would you do if civilization were to collapse? You know, who would be on your post-apocalyptic survival team? How many of us today have actually got any kind of practical skills to do things and make things for yourself? And I realize that I don't. I have no practical skills, nothing that would be of actual use. So I sat down to teach myself them and to try to work out, trying to think through how you could reboot a civilization right from scratch for this new book, For the Knowledge.
And if you study Earth's history, you know that there have been massive extinctions. There have been asteroids where, if there had been, you know, human civilization, then it would have been wiped out completely, or at least most of it. So is that where you started from, imagining, you know, some sort of natural disaster?
Absolutely. And as you say, kind of looking into outer space, there are a number of hazards, a number of genuine threats that have caused mass extinctions in the history of life on Earth. And have kind of affected, even during recorded history. There was a time in the year 1859, which is called the Carrington Event, because that was the name of an astronomer who noticed it. And it's one of the largest solar flares that's ever happened that we know about during human history. And this happened at a time when the world was still basically pre-electrical. There were some telegraph wires strung across the continent, but there wasn't power grids and kind of gadgets and electricity in use in the way that we would be familiar with today. And yet this solar flare, this coronal mass ejection, caused such a surge of electricity in these wires that it started wildfires, kind of in the middle of nowhere from the sparks from these telegraph wires. And if something like that were to happen today, it would crash, or would have the potential to crash, all of the power distribution grids, you know, across a hemisphere of the planet. We'd be knocked back in an instant to kind of a pre-electrical age. And it's this kind of cataclysm, this kind of event that might cause enough of a jolt to kind of collapse society, collapse civilization that I deal with in The Knowledge, along with other things like maybe a nuclear war, an asteroid strike, or maybe something like a pandemic flu, some kind of plague that wipes out people, as has happened in history with the bubonic death and the Black Death and bubonic plague.
And Lewis, you've set yourself a pretty tall order. Not only are you asking, how will I survive this, but how will we rebuild society? How will we preserve human knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's plenty of very good survival guides out there and prepper guides and things you can do as an individual to keep yourself alive and make sure you've got a stockpile of food and weapons and things you would clearly need once law and order and society have collapsed. You're going to have to look after yourself and protect yourself. And I didn't want to write that book again because there's plenty of good examples. But what I wasn't aware of, what I don't think had ever been written before, was what next? What do you do now? You've survived the apocalypse. You've got a community of survivors who have survived, and you're now trying to rebuild. You're trying to recover civilization and start providing things for yourself as a community. So the things I talk about in The Knowledge, that this book about how to rebuild our world from scratch, we look at different themes. We look at how you reboot agriculture from the ground up, literally from the ground up, how you make food for yourself so you don't starve to death. How do you make materials for yourself so you don't freeze to death? How do you work with metals or brick to be able to rebuild? But also, just importantly, it's not just kind of mechanisms and machinery that we rely upon in the modern world. It's all also about the kind of chemistry and the substances that we need, and how do you extract those from the natural world and process and refine them into things you need. So you can make something, you know, as simple as soap to stop yourself picking up transmissible diseases by the principles of hygiene and keeping your hands clean. I kind of look at all these different principles and processes to provide for yourself.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit. It seems as though agriculture would be pretty important. You've got to feed yourself to live. Mm. So what kind of knowledge do we need to know, base-level knowledge about a group of people feeding themselves?
Well, for starters, the very first chapter of the book talks about the grace period, about if you do wake up, you know, the morning after the night before, when kind of the world collapsed and the world, end of the world, as we know, happened last night, you don't have to literally the morning after walk out into a muddy field with a handful of seed and try to make food come out of it. You don't have to get right back to agriculture immediately, because clearly there'd be a lot of food left preserved in all the supermarkets and stores on the roads. So one of the calculations I worked out for the knowledge was, if you were to be locked in an average supermarket with all the kind of preserved food in there and enough water for you to drink, how long could you keep yourself going before that food ran out or went off and you started starving to death? And what I worked out is you could survive about 55 years in a single supermarket on the canned food before you'd eaten it all, and 63 years if you're prepared to eat all the cat food and dog food as well. And so when you multiply that up from not just one supermarket and yourself, but all of the supermarkets and distribution centers across the whole of the United States, and perhaps, you know, tens of thousands, if not 100,000 people surviving, there's still an enormous amount of preserved sustenance you can eat. And that gives you this buffer zone, this crucial grace period, where you get the opportunity to learn from your mistakes and, by a process of trial and error in agricultural fields, work out how to make food for yourself before it becomes a matter of life and death. But clearly things like the invention of the plow you'd want to be able to make for yourself, and understand that the process of cereal crops, which are supported throughout human history, you know, how they grow, what their life cycle is, how you harvest them, how you extract the grain, and then turn that into something you can actually eat, like bread. And one of the examples I talk about in the book is how the millstone, which is, you know, a cylindrical stone that you turn round and you grind the wheat grain between those two millstones, and you might use something like a water wheel or windmill to do that, like people have done throughout history.
What would your average broadcaster or astrobiologist need to know to make that millstone and hook it up to a water wheel?
I mean, there is a diagram in the book showing exactly how to do that. And then the principle behind it makes a lot of intuitive sense. You can have a wheel with some slats sticking out of it, and if you dunk that into the flow of water in a river, the wheel turns, and you use just a single gear called a right-angle gear, which I say is in the diagram in the book, in the knowledge. And that converts the kind of vertical turning to a horizontal turning, which is what you need for a millstone. And all you need for a millstone is, say, just a cylindrical stone, and you can chisel away at something to make that for yourself. And in this sense, that millstone, which has been used for thousands of years throughout the history of civilization, is essentially a technological extension of our molar teeth. It's something we've invented to enhance the way our bodies work and grind and crush up those cereal grains into flour that you then cook in bread, to save your own teeth from having to do all that work yourself. And there's plenty of examples through the history of civilization where you're inventing something or harnessing a natural power source, energy source, to do something that you could have done yourself, but you do it much, much more effectively or much more efficiently and easily. And that's basically the story of civilization, is how we've increased our capabilities over time.
We're talking to Lewis Dartnell. He's UK Space Agency Research Fellow at the University of Leicester. His new book is The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear from you on the topic. What do you think would be your most difficult thing to rebuild in the wake of an apocalypse? And do you have plans should the world as we know it end? What sort of knowledge are you worried about being lost? What needs to be carried through in the event of an apocalypse? Agriculture, maybe, or medicine? What sorts of things are you thinking about? Call in and share your ideas at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We're picking up our discussion with Lewis Dartnell, UK Space Agency Research Fellow at the University of Leicester, and the author of the book, The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch.
And we want to hear from you on this topic. What would be the most difficult thing in our society to rebuild and the most necessary thing to rebuild in the wake of some kind of apocalypse? What skills would you bring to the table if you wanted to join a community of post-apocalyptic survivors? Or what skills do you wish you had? 800-642-1234 is the number. Call now at 800-642-1234 or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
And Lewis, one thing that a lot of people are thinking about is a survival kit. Now, if we move beyond stuff like Band-Aids and aspirin, but stuff that could really benefit civilization and the rebooting of civilization as a whole, what sorts of things should be in our survival toolkit? Things literally, I guess, like tools.
So clearly something like antibiotics would be immensely useful if you were preparing, if you're making arrangements for the end of the world, rather than just the starting point for the thought experiment for the knowledge is that you haven't prepared anything at all. You're just a normal person who wakes up to find civilization has disappeared and everyone's died, and you're trying to kind of start from scratch with a small community of survivors. But if you are able to preserve things ahead of time and kind of scavenge what you need, something like antibiotics would make an enormous difference to keeping you healthy in a kind of post-apocalyptic world, where things like disease will probably come back as the kind of scourge of humanity as it has been throughout history. And one of the things I talk about in the first chapter, during this grace period, where you've got things lying around in abandoned cities that you can scavenge and repurpose and use for yourself, is how you can use everyday objects in new ways, perhaps ways you haven't really thought of using before. And you can, for example, start fires with weird and wonderful combination of objects like a fire alarm or a bottle of water can be used to start a fire when you ironically would have thought that's the kind of thing you would use to warn yourself of fire or put one out. And there's a very surprising use, a medical use, you can put super glue to. And this was actually used during the Vietnam War for quickly patching up soldiers who were injured in the battlefield. And you can use super glue as a very, very effective way of closing a wound before it becomes infected, which you really, really want to be able to avoid in a post-apocalyptic world without access to, kind of healthcare and pharmaceuticals. And you just pull the lips of the wound together and then kind of apply super glue over the top to kind of seal those lips together and, I say, kind of close the wound. So there's a whole load of ideas of things that you can scavenge and repurpose to keep yourself going, whilst at the same time you're trying to learn and rediscover this, the human knowledge that might have been lost for how you do things for yourself and how you could rediscover the penicillin mold to make new antibiotics for yourself.
We'll bring our callers in on this now at 800-642-1234. We'll start with Carl in Madison. Carl, hi.
Yes, hello. I think this conversation is fun and interesting, but almost to me in a childlike way, like when you're a little kid and you say, I'm leaving, I'm going to pack my suitcase and go, and you're 7 years old as though you could possibly make it out there. I think that we as a society, we're an incredibly social animal, and we depend on the intricacies of our dependence on the natural world around us to sustain us. And if there were an apocalypse of any natural sort, that would just be the end of us. I think that what we have around us is the miracle of a world far more complex than we believe we can understand. And the reality that if we don't care for it and take care of it and address things like climate change, these kinds of conversations will be wonderful footnotes to the end of civilization. I don't think there's any way we can possibly invent our ways out of the interrelationship we have with this beautiful planet that we've got to take good care of.
Carl, thanks for the call. So a way to avoid the apocalypse, in part, he's saying there, but also saying a lack of knowledge of nature would hold us back now and in the post-apocalyptic setting.
I think Carl raises a very, very interesting point there, and climate change is clearly a very big hazard for all of us alive today, and certainly our children are going to be growing up in a world that will be certainly different from what we know. And I'm not downplaying these hazards and these risks, and they will, if this hypothetical situation does happen and civilization does collapse and you have to start trying to reboot from scratch, climate change will continue happening nonetheless, even if, you know, the Industrial Revolution has ended and polluting cars and factories disappear, climate change will continue because there's already enough inertia built into the Earth system, and the sea levels will rise. So it is definitely a concern. But the point behind the book, behind the knowledge, how to rebuild a world from scratch, I say it's kind of a thought experiment, and it's, you know, between you and me and all of your listeners, it's not really about the apocalypse at all. That's a conceit, that's a narrative sleight of hand for being able to hold up a mirror to our society, our civilization, and see how it works, and ask the question, what are the fundamental requirements for the running of a civilization? What does it require? What does it need? How do you provide for that? And if you needed to, in a hypothetical situation, how could you go right back to the basics and do it all for yourself, or at least as a community, from scratch to kind of recover it all? So it's about our world, our civilization, and our history of development and progression, and how you might accelerate that during a reboot the second time round.
Well, thank you a lot for the call, Carl. And we move next to Bob calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
Hi. The one point I would like to make out in a reset to the world, I would think the one thing that we would like to see would be textiles, the ability to make textiles with looms, hand techniques of extracting wool. I think it would be a very underestimated thing to just expect to use the fabrics that we have, because that stuff's just not going to last over time.
All right, good point. And I think that's something you would agree with, right, Lewis? A loom would be very handy.
Absolutely agree with Bob. He's bang on the money there. And there is a chapter about the techniques of spinning and weaving and building a loom. Because Bob's absolutely right that one of the things you really need to be able to provide for yourself is clothes, to kind of protect yourself from the elements and keep yourself warm and not die of exposure. And I talk about where you get fibers from. So the very basis of making clothes is extracting fibers from the natural world. And this might be things like cotton or silk or wool from kind of an animal source, and turning that into a thread by spinning it, and then turning that thread into fabric, into textiles, by weaving it, and how you'd be able to achieve that for yourself.
And Lewis, one thing that's fundamental to basically the entire thought experiment of your book is the scientific method. This is something vital, you think, to passing along. Why?
Yeah, so the conceit for the book is that the knowledge contains all the information you would need to rebuild a civilization from scratch. But of course, that's a lie. No one book, and not even an entire library, could genuinely contain enough detail and information and kind of practical details to be able to do all this for yourself. So what I talk about in the book is that at the end of the day, what you need is a method for learning things for yourself, being able to work things out for yourself if a textbook isn't around anymore to tell you it. And this process of how you work out how the world works is a scientific method. It's a knowledge generation machinery that tells you which of the explanations you make up with your kind of imagination in your hypotheses is the one that's probably closest to the truth, and it's how you kind of accumulate knowledge over time. And it, you know, it's what we've been doing since the scientific revolution of the kind of 1500s, 1600s and on from there. And absolutely, you want to retain that same process and that same inquisitiveness of mind. You know, it's the kind of fire you would really want to keep burning brightly in a post-apocalyptic world to recover as quickly as you can.
Reading your book, I kept thinking of a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court by Mark Twain. A 19th century tinkerer goes over to your neck of the woods, but in the mythical Arthurian world, and reinvents mining. He builds factories.
He invents gunpowder to
gunpowder, right.
Powerful wizard he is by blowing up Merlin's tower with his gunpowder that he knows the recipe for.
But he's a guy who's connected to how to make things in a way that most of us in the 21st century aren't. Are you hoping that, at least as part of the thought experiment, we try to be that kind of tinkerer again and make that kind of connection with how our world works?
That's exactly it. The one thing that I found a lot of enjoyment and fascination with when I was writing the knowledge, and what I hope people take away from having read the book, is just a deeper sense of appreciation and understanding of how things work in the world around us, and how this life support system of modern civilization provides for us and serves us. and creates and makes all these things that we used to know how to do ourselves, you know, 200 years ago, but none of us know anymore because civilization does it for us. I think that's a fascinating process to go through and just maybe have your eyes open a little bit more as to how these things work.
Lewis, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Lewis Dartnell, UK Space Agency Research Fellow at the University of Leicester. He's the author of the new book, The Knowledge, How to Rebuild Our World from Scratch.
You know, as a wannabe maker who never quite gets there, I always think about doing some of the things that might build some of these skills. I don't know, do you have any valuable skills that would help us in the post-apocalyptic world? Yeah.
I can bake stuff, and you're really good at bending paper clips.
That's true. So seek me out for all the post-apocalyptic paperclip bending needs.